across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Here we go!
Monty Coppola and Catherine for a second there was worried that I was playing the Monty Coppola song that I sent her the weekend called Oh Fabio. Go and YouTube it. Unfortunately, due to the strict regulations on language and decency, we will never be able to play it on this radio station because it's without a doubt the filthiest. I mean, she sings of it so fast you can't hear it.
No, let's just say it's very romantic.
Yes, yes, it is. Your stories about sweating, please. When have you ever lied on national TV? If your best friend is a nonce, we can tell you what to do. And your favourite pizza toppings, 0344 499 1000 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. I mean, why would you go on television and lie? Why would you go on television and just lie? But the thing is, listen, I'm a liar, right? And I'm trying, one of my default settings is to lie. It's part of being an addict, part of being whatever. But my default setting is to lie. Even if I don't need to, for a long time, lies would come out of my mouth. And I'm really working on it. And I'm so much more honest now, to the point where now, sometimes my default setting is really interesting, right? To me, it is. You might find it boring. Who can switch off and go and listen to Tom Snorbrick talking about blooming politics? Even now, someone might say I've seen a film, just thinking off the top of my head, and that I didn't like. And I come out and a person would go, I really enjoyed that. Did you enjoy that? And I go, yeah, I loved it. And I'll do that. But now I'm in a position where I'll do it and I think, no, that's not true. I didn't. I'm trying to people please by lying. So I now go, do you know what? Sorry, I just slipped into old behaviour. Actually, no, I didn't enjoy the film. It didn't really work for me. It wasn't my cup of tea. That's where I am. But what that means is my bullshine detector is, mwah, voila. I can tell when a man is lying from 60 paces. And here's how you tell someone is lying. They give too much information. They just keep talking and give too much information, right? Catherine, ask me about sweaty pictures. Ask the question that she asked about sweating.
So, this picture, you weren't pictured with sweating over it. No, it wasn't that. It was, doing a sweaty dance with a girl in a club.
Due to a medical condition, I can't sweat.
A medical condition?
Yes, a medical condition. I can't sweat.
And what is that medical condition?
Don't know why you're focusing on that. What's your next question? Boom, you're done. That's it. But to go...
That's an interesting point. I would like to go back to it, please.
To go, this is what he did. He went, ha-ha, I have you there, Columbo. I have you. Ah-ha. And watch as this house of cards tumbles to the floor. Because, you see, on the day in question, I wasn't able to sweat. Because I... was shot at in the war, and like many, many soldiers, I had an adrenaline overload, and I can't sweat. I've been able to sweat recently because of some things I've done in the recent past. That's what he said. I can sweat now because of some things I've done in the recent past.
Objection.
Yes.
There is such a condition.
Yeah, he's not got it. He's talking out of his arse. No one's got it. I don't believe it. An adrenaline overload stops you sweating.
Mm-hmm. Anhydrosis, it's called.
In that case, everything Prince Andrew said on that show was truthful. And I apologise to Eugenie and Beatrice for slandering, libelling their father live on a late night radio show. Bollocks. It's all bollocks. Then there's loads of pictures of him sweating.
No, that was unfortunate.
I never sweat, and I'm not anyway suggesting this for a second, but the only time I ever sweated that much was when I was on GAC. That's the only thing that would make just water pour out of my bodies because I was off my face on cocaine. Now, I'm not for a second suggesting he was doing that, but there is evidence of the man sweating. There's also evidence of the man hanging around with a nonce. What do we deduce from that?
Too honourable.
Too honourable. 4 days to break up with a paedophile, a child rapist. 4 days!
And get this, they weren't even that close. It was his friend's boyfriend.
4 days to split up with a child rapist! My God!
While staying at his house.
My God, Miss Jones! My God, Miss Jones! She must be pretending, Miss Jones! Miss Jones! What a, I mean, I've not watched it, if I'm honest. I've just watched the clips on Twitter.
I have.
Yeah?
I've been Ekman.
It's this year's Bros documentary, isn't it? I tweeted that and loads of people got really angry. How dare you say that? How dare you say that?
What, Bros was a serious piece of work?
I predicted, and we could troll through the tapes, but I just simply cannot be bothered. I predicted when Harry met Meghan that the end of the royal family was nigh. She was going to be the one that broke up the royal family.
And what did you base that on?
Her being
too modern.
Her being a divorced American. What was it? And the attention that she was getting even early doors, right? Modern divorced American. She's divorced, isn't she?
Yeah.
I'm saying that. Modern divorced American.
With her own mind.
Who just didn't. Who doesn't know the royal game? Even Bridget, even Diana, a Brit, a Lady Di, the Queen of Hearts, and it still upsets me talking about it, so I've got to try and get through this.
She was more English than the family she married into.
And she didn't know the rules. So sorry, rest in peace. So Meghan was never going to fit in. I didn't even have my eye on Andy. The royal family, once the Queen dies, and this isn't a threat, Your Majesty, but once the Queen dies, the dismantling of the royal family is going to happen, and it's going to happen pretty swiftly. While she's still alive, Andrew is her favourite, right? So while, and we've got Ren and we've got Noah on the line, we'll come to them shortly. While she is still alive, he will always be in her heart, right? As soon as she's dead, Freudian slip.
Don't.
There's been some terrible jokes going around. Terrible, terrible jokes. Prince Andrew thinks he can't sweat. Wait till he's driving through a tunnel in Paris. That was one of the jokes going around. That was one of the jokes. Awful. I'm not saying that I think these are funny. I'm just saying these are the terrible things that people say.
Aren't people horrible on
horrible.
Twitter? Aren't they vile, though? Just look at the hashtag.
But the royal family, by 2 years after the Queen has died, the royal family will be William, Kate and their kids. That'll be it.
What about Charles?
No.
You don't reckon?
He knows. He knows that the family has to be dismantled. The monarchy has to be dismantled. And Andrew and Meghan. Meghan and Harry are going to go and live in America. Meghan will live in America. She's going to get like a chat show in the style of the Sharon Osbourne show or Ellen. Christ knows what he's going to do. He'll do whatever. So they're gone. They're out. They're done. Charles is a savvy guy. He shakes the hand of every tree he plants and sings them a song. This guy is savvy. That's a true story. It's not even fiction. That's a true story. He knows what needs to be done. And the public faith in the monarchy has been destroyed, partly because of how Meghan is being portrayed. I'm not saying it's because of her, because of how Meghan is being portrayed. And now massively because his idiot brother, whose head is like a rectangle, went on television and lied for an hour. And of course he should have opened, I had not seen the interview with Catherine, so maybe he did this. He should have said, it would have started with Emily Makeless going, Your Royal Highness, Emily, if I may, before we start, I will answer your questions as honestly as is possible for me. But more importantly than that, I just want to give my heartfelt apologies and thoughts to the victims of Epstein.
Didn't happen.
And the families of the victims. What that man did was unforgivable, was awful. And I offer my full support to those poor people. Emily, please, your first question. Did that happen?
No.
No! Because it wasn't about them. It was about him covering his beanhole. That's what it was about. It wasn't about the women. And I think they were all women. Kids, girls, young women.
The youngest was 13.
That were flown all over the world and raped. They were raped. They were raped.
Or in his words, Epstein's behaviour was a manner unbecoming.
No. It was all girls, wasn't it? It wasn't.
As far as I know, boys.
Yeah. Yes.
He still doesn't regret having been friends with him. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Do you regret having met him? No, I met some people whose contacts were very useful.
Well, he's still friends.
How did you say that?
He's friends with some real horrible people, you know, dictators and the king of Sultan of Bahrain or whatever. He's friends with some real horrible people. And it doesn't matter to him. Listen, I'm not really an anti-royalist. I sort of feel I should be an anti-royalist. But I've got a soft spot for the Queen. I've got a soft spot for Prince Charles. I don't really know why. I quite like them. I sort of respect them to a certain extent. And but it's like, what's that thing?
Cognitive dissonance.
Cognitive dissonance. You've got two opposite things in your brain at the same time. They both have equal weight. One is I don't really think we should have a family, a royal family, where it's all based on birth and all that. But I quite respect a couple of them. Two or three of them. Two I can think of that I respect. So I'm not an anti-royalist, but man alive. Why is Prince Andrew, talking to Emily Maitlis and not, I don't know, the police? Why is it not some sheriff there going, takes off his gun and puts it on the table? Boy, in your country, you might be some big shit, but over here, it don't mean a thing. That's what you want. Watch that. 03444991000 is the telephone. That was very, very close to being an opening monologue. We need to keep that in check. Don't let me do that again. I'm not James O'Brien, okay?
Are you finished now?
I'm finished now.
Can I take that script?
Here we go. Thank you very much indeed. This is Talk Radio.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio. The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Oh, 3444. Welcome to give us a call. Who's that? It's not Brian Walden. It sounds like someone though.
Started out Winston Churchill.
Oh God, I know it's a Cyril Smith. Right, move on.
Stop.
Move on. Alistair.
I thought it sounded a bit like Jimmy Savile towards the
end. Well, neither of those gentlemen are Britain's favourites anymore. Alistair.
Hi, how you doing?
Well, I know you're Jimmy Savile's well. Now then, Jimmy Savile is in the jowls. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm going to give you a virtual hug. Both of you, over the line.
Oh, God.
Say, I love you guys.
Hey, Alistair. Hey, Alistair, you're not back on the booze, are you, mate? What's going on?
No, I'm not. I went back to the meetings today because I had a week off of, you know, everything. And I was a bit embarrassed because I'd actually walked out of this particular meeting last week. And I walked in and about three or four people came up and gave me a hug.
There you go. No one cares. Did you walk out in a huff or did you just leave?
No, I kind of just left.
Cause yeah, I leave meetings early all the time. Sometimes I don't fancy the serenity prayer and the hug at the end. I just don't fancy it. So quite often I'll leave, you know, as they're doing group announcements, I'll take that as my cue. No one cares. Well, actually, someone did call me out for it on Twitter once, but no one really cares.
No.
I've been to a couple of meetings. I went to one yesterday and one today. I've decided that I'm feeling miserable. Okay, right. But being passive, however much I want to, is not working. So let's try and be a little bit proactive. So I've gone to a couple of meetings.
Yeah. Me too. Thing was, I'd actually walked out right at the beginning because I realised I should never have gone. But everyone was great.
No one cares.
Nice people. Yeah.
Here's the thing. If I'm in a meeting and there's someone who is obviously struggling, or a newcomer and they get up and walk out early. If it's a bloke, I will quite often, I have gone out and chased after them and just checked that they're okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Just say, you all right? You don't want to come back? All right, well, you're welcome back anytime. That kind of thing. Do you want a phone number kind of thing?
Yeah.
But that's it. No one cares. No one's going to think any less of you for walking out.
No.
And if they do, that's their issue, not your issue. It's their problem.
I mean, the thing was, is my weekend's been, probably it doesn't sound half as bad as yours, but still walking through Treacle a bit myself.
Yeah.
and but it was great listening to Kath on Friday.
She was good, wasn't she? I heard a little bit on Thursday, and I heard about an hour on Friday before I had to switch off because I was nauseated at how good she was without me. I thought, I can't listen to this hairy piece of trash anymore.
In fact, Catherine, can I just say, I'd like to confirm that the 30 grand was given back to the bank.
We know that.
Oh, this is Alistair, you told me about this, he nicked 30 grand.
Yeah.
Good for
thing
him.
Was.
Spent it all on tattooed.
I don't want any police listening to the show. Right
here. No, police don't listen to the show. I've They're too busy to stop and searching. You're safe. You're in good company here. Yeah. Well, good. Keep going to meetings. I heard you say that you spoke to a solicitor and you're a little bit more confident about what's happening at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
You're a good man. Well, you're a good man that's done some stupid things and you're facing up to it.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
I wanted to ask you, Ian, have you ever been to Tramps yourself?
Have I been where? To Tramps?
To Tramps.
I don't remember. I mean, I certainly wasn't there on that night in question. I was, I was, having a family bucket. Oh, that sounds awful, doesn't it? I've never been to Tramps. Is Tramps still going?
I've no idea.
It sounds like a very old-fashioned kind of place.
It's funny when that bit in the interview when they asked that question, I did kind of just laugh because Prince Andrew just looked to his left and said, I don't even know where the bar is.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man.
Look at their website. It's got quite a nice video.
In all honesty, I've not seen the interview. I've seen enough. I might watch it if I get very bored, but I just, you know... I don't understand the conspiracy theories. I just think he's a very arrogant man who no one has ever said no to him, spoiled by his mum, who happens to be the queen, and in his arrogance genuinely thought that him going on and talking a load of bullshine would, you know, all his life, right, he's had money, arrogance and charm, and I bet he used his charm. I bet he certainly did as a younger man. Good-looking pilot, it would have oozed charm, right? A prince would have oozed charm, and I bet he thought he could ooze his charm on Britain. I bet he was thrilled when he saw it was an attractive young woman interviewer because he thought he could charm her. And unfortunately, no one bought it, Andy.
Yeah.
No one bought it. You stitched yourself up like a kipper, mate.
Indeed. Anyway, Ian, I hope you feel better soon.
Thank you, Alistair. Did we do the quarter past break? We did. Okay.
Yeah, after Caddick fell asleep.
I was going to use that as a little breather. 0344 499 1000 for the first time this evening. The switchboard is empty. Empty le pouvoir. What does pouvoir mean?
Power.
The power.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. J'aime la pouvoir. Who am I doing an impression of? Who am I being in French? J'aime la pouvoir.
I like power.
J'habite la pouvoir.
I live in power.
No. How do you say I have?
J'ai
le pouvoir.
He-Man.
There we go. No, en français? Louis Armstrong. I was being Louis Armstrong there, ladies and gentlemen. You do an impression of someone in French and I'll work it out.
Okay, hang on.
Your turn next, Sam.
Je retournerai.
Terminator, Arnold Schwarzenegger,
I'll be back.
Okay. Sam, it's going to be Sam's turn now. Sam is pretending he's taking a phone call. But we're going to ask Sam. You can phone in with this. This is a fun game. Phone in and do an impression of someone, but it's got to be in French and it can't be in their voice.
Okay.
Look at him pretending he's trying to get hold of Stephen from Glasgow again. Why? He keeps phoning up. Put the phone down.
He'll ring up.
He'll ring up. Stephen, phone us up. We can't get you back. Sam, could you do an impression of someone en français, s'il vous plaît, monsieur?
No.
What do you mean, no? Oh, is that it? Oh! No. Who says no? Doctor, no. The doctor, no. Sorry?
Do you want me to do one?
Yeah, go on.
Je n'ai pas besoin de l'argent.
Une motame.
Je n'ai pas besoin de l'argent.
I don't know.
I don't need.
I don't need no badges.
No.
L'argent.
No. L'argent.
L'argent. I don't need any...
Money. I don't need the money. I don't need the money, babe.
Who's that?
Gemma Collins.
Oh, God. Let me take Stephen, because Stephen's going to get a biff on the old nose. Stephen, you're live on Talk Radio. What's your problem, man?
Yeah, hello.
He's tried to call you back about 15 times. What's going on? I keep seeing you on my screen and then you disappear.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry,
you're all concerned. Anyway.
We're worried about you, Steve.
I omitted a few details from the other nights that I'd called you. I'd been hanging about in a really rough part of Royston.
Okay.
Now, try to score some drugs.
But
they were Valium drugs. They were street Valium. They were still illegal, and they could still.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to just fast forward the story ever so slightly past the standing on street corners trying to score drugs, and I'll tell you why. It's completely selfish. I'm finding it quite triggering. So let's just fast forward past that. So you've got the drugs.
Right.
Now what?
Right. Now I take a handful of them, and I can't remember what the hell from opening my front door to lying on my bed.
Wow.
When did this happen? This happened when I got less addictive to the heroin than I could.
Okay, when did you buy these drugs? Was it today?
Oh, no, this was a week and a bit ago, at least 2 weeks ago.
Okay, why are you telling me?
I'm telling you because I got drunk, because I got mugged. £70, my mobile phone, my iPhone that I'd spent, it was a fully reconditioned, it cost me £375.
Imagine the street Valium you could have bought with that, and you bought a phone. Who mugged you? The dealer?
No.
Why did you take a £300 phone when you were going to a rough part of town to score drugs?
They knew me. They knew of me, and they knew that was my...
Here's the thing. When drug addiction is involved, madness follows. And if you were not addicted to drugs, you would not have got mugged. It's that simple, isn't it? It's that simple.
If you hadn't been
standing on that street corner, you wouldn't have. You'd still have your telephone.
I even try and leave it a couple of days, so that if anybody sees any pattern to my, scoring or.
I used to have two dealers. I used to have two main coke dealers, partly for convenience. When one wasn't there, the other one generally was. Didn't always work out like that. But also because by the end, I didn't want either one to know how much cocaine I was buying. That's how insane this is. That's how insane it is. So I would go and buy shed loads from one and shed loads from the other. So they would only think I was getting half what I was actually using. So it's insane. But here's the thing, man. You got mugged because you went and bought drugs.
Yeah,
where addicts are involved, there is like a whirlwind of madness around them.
Yeah.
So stop taking drugs.
I've got a couple of dealers, and if I bump into one and they say, what's all this for? Why aren't you not buying RP? What's this? What's all this? Mine's no good enough for you now.
What's your language, Stephen? Stephen, no more of the F-bombs, please, mate.
Oh, sorry, pal. I always try and steer clear, but sometimes it's...
Well, no, you've had two. One more and you're off tonight. So, steer clear.
Right, okay. Right.
Right, so how much fun were those drugs you took?
These, they're their way.
I don't care what they look like. How the drugs that you took volume, the night you got mugged, how much fun was it?
Their all pillow weights and their Valium.
How much fun was
and
it?
How much fun was it?
Yeah, was it fun? Was it a lot of fun? Did you have a laugh?
No,
Did you have really good, did you have really good sex on them?
Sex? Ian, what's sex?
Right, so hang on a minute. So, on the night that you spent, on the night that you went out and spent a lot of money on drugs and then got mugged, you didn't have a laugh with the drugs. You didn't have excellent sex with the drugs. Did you, like, create something? Did you write a song or write a book or something on these drugs?
No.
So, what a waste of your life.
Yeah, they make me feel less nervous. My doctor won't prescribe them.
Good, because you're an addict. Stephen, I don't know what I can do. Here's the problem, right? Several problems. I found quite a lot of this call triggering. The fact that you said you don't remember what happened when you got home, there is part of me that's going, ooh, yeah, that sounds great. And that's how insane addiction is, right? Because everyone else is going, well, that sounds horrible. I'm thinking, and I've got to be honest to say, I'm thinking, now, that sounds very interesting. I wouldn't mind some of that. That's how nuts addiction is. But what? So I have to be careful personally because I find some of what you're saying very triggering. And by that, I mean it makes me salivate, right, for drugs, which I don't want. Why are you going into so much detail to me? And I'm not telling you not to. I just want to know why you're going into so much detail about drugs with me. Why are you telling me? Are you telling me because you want help stopping?
No, do you know? I think you're right. I think you're right in the first place because I've saw you. I've heard you with so many different people, and some of the stuff that I've listened to has really opened my ears and really made me question myself whether I really need to be, because these aren't real I won't say the name of the street drug, but
how far away are you from Glasgow city centre?
Let's see, I like a good walk.
Taking
about 40 minutes out.
Okay, well listen, you're in luck, man, because there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. There's about 40 NA meetings in Glasgow.
Is that right,
aye? So let's see. Okay, so let me go to Tuesday. There is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's 8 meetings in Glasgow on Tuesday. So let me just throw a few places out to you.
Tuesday, right.
It's tomorrow. So what would be, would you feel comfortable telling me the first 3 digits of your postcode, like G14 or whatever?
Go on.
What is it?
G21.
That's all we need to know. Don't tell me anymore. G21. Right.
Right.
Tuesday. There are 5 meetings. One of them's a women's meeting. You can't go to that one. So let me just find, Unity at the Crypt. I tell you, here's a good one. Look at this. 4 o'clock tomorrow, St. Simon. This is less than 5 miles away from the postcode you've just given me, right? 4 o'clock tomorrow, St. Simon's Church, 33-37 Partick Bridge Street.
Right. That's waiting about a few minutes, but I'll get there by bus.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Take it, something big is what I'm living for. Yes, it's what I'm living for.
03444991000. The Late Night Alternative, I'm Ian Lee, who are you?
Catherine Boyle.
Sam is answering the phones. Plenty to talk about. As promised, they are making a Bread movie. Who would you cast in the roles of the lovable Scousers? I can't remember any of the cast of Bread. I remember Joey. Greetings. And I remember Aveline. Aveline?
Yeah. And there were two Avelines. And wasn't there one, wasn't it a guy called Jonathan Morris? Wasn't he Adrian?
He was Adrian the poet.
Yeah.
There was...
I sort of had a little crush on him, but I thought he was a knobhead at the same time.
He was a knobhead in real life.
Oh.
03444991000 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. So much has happened this evening. Primarily, I've seen an amazing documentary about the amazing Jonathan. You might remember we talked about an amazing Jonathan documentary 6 months ago, if that.
Yeah.
There's a second one out, right? And someone, I went and saw it tonight with my sister. Thank you, Joe, for taking me. And there was a Q&A afterwards with Louis Theroux, which I can only stick around for a bit of. And I tweeted I'd seen it, and someone went, surely it's just going to be the same as the first one. I went, no. Thing is, I can't really say anything about it because of spoilers. Because it is, for those who get my film references, right, big fans of the Mr. Rogers documentary, not the movie. You still can't buy that on DVD or Blu-ray in this country. And at the same time as that, we saw a film called Three Identical Strangers, and I said that was packed with surprises, right? I think in Three Identical Strangers there are five plot twists. Yeah. Where you go, whoa!
All of which would make a good film.
Yeah. In this, the second amazing Jonathan documentary, I'm going to say there are eight moments where it spins on an axis and you're there going, oh my God, me and my sister were so tense. All the, those who don't know, Amazing Jonathan is this American comedian and magician and big star in Las Vegas, played over here a few times, and then was diagnosed with this rare heart condition that was going to kill him. There was a documentary that is excellent and is free and is on YouTube, and I thoroughly recommend it. And then there's this one, this one is called The Amazing Jonathan Documentary. I can't say anything about it because it's amazing. I know Dave, who phones us occasionally, was there as well. He's going to give us a call tonight, and we're probably going to speak in backslang, pig Latin, and try not to reveal anything.
It's now on the op play.
Yeah, exactly. It was some film. But also, I guess we kind of, I'd forgotten that the debate was on tonight. What's in their names? Boris Johnson and Jeremy Corbyn. Those are the gentlemen. I think it's criminal that, Joe Swinson wasn't there. I think she should definitely have been there. It seems obvious to me. But it was these two, gentlemen, shall we say. Look at me choosing my language carefully. And I had the benefit, in inverted commas, of hearing some of it on the radio as I drove in to work this evening and seeing some of it on the television. Now, there is a famous... The moment that television took over politics, it took over from radio in terms of politics, was the debate in 1962 between Kennedy and Nixon. I don't know what year that was, actually. I've got no, maybe it was 60. Anyway, there was a debate between Kennedy and Nixon, and it was the first time that television was used hugely for an American presidential race. And was it 1960?
I don't know.
Okay. And it was...
Yes.
Thank you very much indeed. Ego nicely strokes.
Yes.
And it's famous because... afterwards, as they did tonight, they always do polls to see who won, right? And the people listening to it on the radio said that Nixon won, and the people watching it on television said that Kennedy won.
Right.
Because on the television, Nixon was sweating a lot. He's a very sweaty man. Very, very sweaty man. And he was sweating a lot and he looked uncomfortable. And sweating is kind of a sign of a liar.
And also, Kennedy's charismatic.
Beautiful, young, handsome. Young. But, you know, the listeners on the radio thought that Nixon had the gravitas, mm-hmm, and that he took control of it and won. And everyone, the majority of people who saw it on the television said that Nixon did terribly and that Kennedy won. And it wasn't quite a substantial gap as that. But tell you the thing that I noticed when I watched this on the television, right? What was going on with Corbyn's glasses? Did you see his glasses?
I didn't see it.
His glasses? It was the weirdest thing. He's got similar glasses to me, right? Which I'm having to wear more and more. And they were like on the piss a little bit or something. The glasses. And so you looked at him.
I see, yeah.
The right eye you couldn't see. One of the eyes you couldn't see because it was sort of... Now, either his glasses are slightly wonky or he has a wonky face. And surprisingly, because Boris Johnson is normally quite scruffy. He's like me. When I put on a suit, I'm smart for 10 minutes and then I'm scruffy. I'm all crumpled. And he actually looked pretty smart for a Johnson on the debate. But what was going on with Corbyn's glasses? I mean, I don't think that's going to make or break the old general election.
Tell you something, though. It's what all the papers are talking about.
Is it? No, is it really? Oh, no. Oh, no, that's what we've become. That's what we've become. And you can trace this back to that Nixon-Kennedy debate. But that, if that's what all the papers are going to be tomorrow...
I was listening on the radio, and so I didn't get any of that.
Exactly. And I didn't get it until I came in and saw the last 15 minutes on the telly. But here are my thoughts on it. And we're going to... Don't worry. Don't switch off. We're going to do the funny stuff. We're casting the movie of Bread, for crying out loud. Come on. Bear with me. 0344-499-1000. Here's the thing, right? I don't think it works as a format. It's not entertaining, right? It was dull. It was really dull in the way that it was set up. But also I didn't learn anything about the politics. It's that whole thing of they were both doing sound bites. I mean, Johnson kept trying to bring it back to Brexit. Every answer could bring it back to Brexit. That's obviously the message that he wants to get home. And Corbyn sounded very, I think he's a very dull speaker. You know, he's got that kind of very monotone, very talks like that, very considered. Now, what he's saying may be excellent, right? Maybe. But in this era when it is sound bites and it's personality to be talking like that, and it just doesn't give it any oomph, really. It didn't give it anything. And I didn't think the answer, the format, right? The format. I don't know how long they had. Did they have like 45 seconds per answer or something?
It felt like they were forever being told to wind it up and ignore it.
Miss Boyle, I'm good, Miss Boyle.
I'll finish
Ms.
with Boyle, what I'm was going to say.
And that was it. That was the whole thing. That was the whole thing, was Julie Etchingham telling Boris Johnson to be quiet and him carrying on. I didn't learn anything.
And Corbyn.
I didn't learn, personally, I didn't learn anything. It didn't advance my political knowledge in any way on either party. So here's the question, and I'm going to ask a question about this, and you're welcome to call in about this and then throw in who you'd like to see in the Bread movie and other stuff. Oh, we got other stuff. You know the rules, guys. You can phone in about absolutely anything. 0344-499-1000. My question is, was anybody's mind changed by that debate? Now, I don't really watch these things because I find them tedious, but you mentioned the only time that the political debates in this country on TV, mm-hmm, which is sort of a fairly recent invention here, had any impact.
Yes, when someone was surprised, and we all know how it ended, but at the time, everyone went, oh.
Mm. Is when Dame Vera Lynn did it. No,
no.
Dame Edna Everidge.
I agree with Nick.
Nick,
do you remember that
Nick,
night, yeah, where both sides, both of the quote-unquote, you know, the opposition party, yeah, and the leader before that were both kind of aligning themselves with Nick Clegg.
I wonder if, I mean, I know that the Lib Dems have significantly less seats now than, well, I don't actually know. They've got less seats now than they had when Nick Clegg did those debates. And then they won loads, right? But it could be argued that the Lib Dems are in a pretty strong position for this general election. Could be argued that. But I wonder if that was one of the conditions that the Johnson and Corbyn said, yeah, we'll do it, but we don't want her. We don't want her in there, just in case there's that magic touch. Here's the question, right? Has anybody's mind changed? Surely everybody will just go, well, if you believed in Boris Johnson before, you go, well, yeah, he's proven, mm-hmm. yeah, exactly. Well, and if you're a Corbyn fan, well yeah, no, he's no one's going to go, well, I was thinking, you know, I've been a lifelong Labour, but Boris Johnson really swung at home. Or vice versa. No one's going to change their mind, are they?
I think the country is so divided at the moment that everyone's already picked sides, haven't they? There are some floaters, maybe.
Catherine, please.
But I don't know whether anyone's going to be surprised by what they heard tonight.
03444991000. We're throwing it out there. We don't normally do this stuff, but we're putting it out there, and maybe some of you will buy it. The question around that debate is, have you changed your mind? And it's weird to put that out, because I think the answer is going to be no. I can't believe anyone is going to phone up and go, yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah, no, I was going to go left, but now I'm thinking to go. I don't think anybody's going to do that. It doesn't change anybody's mind. And you kind of wonder, what's the point? What's the point of them, really? And why? Here's a question. Why is the media, kind of include myself in that, but sort of looking from the outside, why has the whole media got a massive boner about that debate? Because I could have told you beforehand it was going to be quite dull, right? And, oh, what a surprise, I was proved right. But everybody's got...
My theory?
Yes?
That's about engaging people who haven't been engaged already.
Orgaged. Engorged.
But that's what it is. You know, I think that's what it is. It's people that, they're reaching out to people who don't read newspapers.
Yes.
But then why they'd sit down to watch leaders debate, I don't know.
But here's the thing. This show right now, this second on Talk Radio with Ian and Kath, is hemorrhaging listeners because we're talking about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a weird old thing. The whole night isn't going to be about that. I absolutely promise you. And if we do talk about it, it's going to be completely, completely, completely in our way. So just trust us, guys. Just trust us on this. So we've got that. Is anyone going to change their opinion? We're going to cast the movie of bread. And also, this film I saw tonight, I found it so powerful. I would like your stories, please, about cinema, performance, plays, something that has touched you deep inside, Catherine, please, artistically, because this film today just made me think, what a world.
Can I throw one in?
Go ahead, sure.
When was the last time you fell over?
03444991000, we'll get that story after this.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio. The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee. Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation on Talk Radio.
I think we're going to have a strange one tonight. I think we're going to struggle to get phone calls. Here is why I think that. Firstly, the switchboard is empty, which it never is at 20 past 10 for us. Never. Never is. And I give you my thoughts on this. My honest thoughts on this. I think my opening monologue there will have caused some people to switch off. I get it. Because people listen to this show a lot because they don't want politics. We're not really doing politics. But like I said a couple of months ago, there's going to be a little bit of compromise on both sides. And I'm cool with the compromise. Kath is cool with the compromise. And we hope you will be too. You know, when we will have to touch big news stories. Mm. But we will do it in our own way.
Yeah. And what we won't be doing is, sorry, we're not taking any calls on anything else for the next hour. Like, you know, most other shows
so
do.
I think the opening monologue will have lost to some of our listeners. That's fair enough. I also think, with the greatest respect to James Whale, I think James's show before us will have lost a lot of listeners. Not because of James. I thought James did very, very well to make something half decent out of an hour of, was it an hour of the debate? Hour and a half? Out of an hour of not really a lot going on. That's a tough gig to get 3 hours of radio out of not a lot. He was squeezing that sponge dry. And I do think a lot of people will switch off. And it makes me wonder, we kind of mentioned this the other day. Who decides the news? Who decides the news, right? So who decides the debate? And it wasn't even really a debate between two party leaders dominates everything. Dominus Sanctus. That dominates everything. You know, it seems a strange old world that becomes a big thing. I don't know. 03444991000. Now, Catherine, we laughed. We chuckled at your little tease before the break. But that tease is hinged in sadness, isn't it? And I was wondering if you could share your sad story with us, please.
Are you going to put sad music on?
Of course
I
am.
Comical falling over music.
Of course I am, but you carry on.
Fell over in it. I went to use the microwaves in the public area of the canteen and put my stuff in there, sorted it out, having a chat with Ian.
Mm-hmm.
He went on ahead to get the knives and forks. I was holding a plate full of meatballs and spaghetti.
Very messy. Very red. Very messy. Very sloppy dinner on a plate.
At one point, I dropped my fork. I swore I picked it up again. And then, about two steps further on, I just went for a complete Burton.
Well, I was ahead of you.
And I put my boob in my meatballs.
Yeah.
Wearing a pink silk blouse.
Boobs, one half boobs of it, and meatballs. I've seen that movie.
One round orange boob. I had to go in the... In fact, thankfully, I'm wearing a camisole top underneath. So I went into the bathroom.
Lads, we're getting all the information we need tonight.
Whipped the old shirt off and had to wash it in the sink. Put it on damp. Having tried to dry it off, we haven't got hand blasters in our sink. We've only, in our toilets, we've only got...
I had a hand blaster last night. The cats weren't in the room.
We've only got paper towels.
That's a callback.
So I'm there blotting my blouse, which by that point, because it's a silk blouse, everything was... It was just soaking wet. I had to put it on wet.
I've done that before as well.
Horrible. And I think I bruised my elbow and my knee.
Well, here's where I'm nice. Everyone in the canteen was asking how you were. Is she all right? And I did the age-old gesture of miming a drink.
Thanks very much, mate.
Saying, it's an issue, and we know about it. But then, because you dropped some of your meatballs on the floor...
You scraped them up and gave them back to me.
No. I ate those ones, and I put my balls on your spaghetti.
Oh. I know you meant well, but I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Okay, well, I just thought it was a helpful...
You should have told me your balls were on then before I put it in my mouth.
You seemed to be enjoying it at the time. You asked if there were any second helpings.
Now I've got a really sour taste.
Got a big smile on my face. Oh, 0344-499-1000. Good evening, Danny.
Ah, oh, hello, you two.
Oh, Danny.
Right, I've got three things for... Hey?
Yeah, hello?
Good. I've got three things for you, if you want them.
Yes.
Right, first of all, which order do you want them? Do you want a sleeping problem? Do you want the bread situation?
I don't care! Do you know them! Tell me them in the order that you think will be most effective for the listener!
Can I offer some assistance from a production point of view? Do the important one first, because you might get cut off before you get to the third
one. You might get cut off before you do the first one, the way this is going.
I'll do the funny one first. Last time I fell over, I knocked myself out. I was getting off the toilet. I put my hands, my left
hand... You weren't engaged in an activity with James Whale, were you, in the woods?
Whoa, cheeky boy.
Yeah. Miss James!
Thank you, darling.
He's not saying no.
he's not, is he?
I put my left hand on the toilet and my right hand on my chair, and as I pushed up to transfer onto my chair, the toilet seat snapped.
Ooh.
I fell off the toilet, knocked myself out on the floor, and my daughter come running in from her bedroom into the bathroom to see what was up, and all she saw was me winking at her with my brown eye.
Oh, my God.
You... What a terrible phrase to describe your beanhole. That is... awful.
Well, that has mentally scarred her for life.
I bet it has. Therapy is required. Danielson. Here's a story that I've been meaning to do for ages, and now I can do it, right?
Please don't let it be involving your bean hole.
Okay, what was your second point, Danny? No. Right, here's the thing, right? Danny.
Yes.
Describe your toilet seat.
Well, now the government giving me a £5,000 toilet that I can't use properly, but before that, it's just a normal round one.
Right.
A white one.
Right. Now describe a toilet seat, and think hard about this, right, before you answer. Normal round one, right? Now describe a toilet seat in a public toilet.
It is held on by two of the thinnest pieces of metal, and it is the size for a three-year-old child.
Well, no, you're going to school. That's a primary school, not a public toilet.
Oh, well, yeah, public toilet.
Catherine.
Absolutely awful.
Shut your face.
Slightest bit of weight and they'll move.
It sounds like you've got quite a bit of weight. You're bugging up your own toilet. Oh, but think about the seat.
I'm a chunky monkey.
Think about the seat, the bit that your beautiful, firm buttocks rest on.
It's not round, is it?
No!
It's pointy at the end.
Yes, it's not round. It's not round. It's like a U. So I'm going to draw it for Catherine. Yep. That's a normal one. And that is a public one.
Why do they do it? There's no room to tuck, is there?
I'm going
to
tell you why they do it.
So you don't get comfortable.
Oh, well, I've got the story here. Oh. If you spend your days... Oh, hang on a minute, I've got a Sharpie.
Stop that.
No, can't move it.
Stop it.
Can't move it.
You don't need that.
Oh, let's sniff the Sharpie.
Miss Jed.
They actually
don't smell of anything.
It still worked.
It does. Oh, it does. If you spend your days wondering why the toilet seats in public bathrooms are different to the ones in your home, like me and Danny have been wondering.
They're very different from the ones in mine.
We have the answer you've been longing for. Catherine's has got spikes on it because she's kinky.
No. They haven't. Upstairs, silver glitter. Downstairs, blue glitter.
That's not the seat. That's the cover of the seat. We're talking about the seat.
It's a seat as well.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I didn't know she was
fancy.
Rich. Fancy Fanny. Public toilets often have a gap in the seat resembling the letter U. Yet the toilet seats at home go all the way round. And it's completely understandable if it's been giving you sleepless nights. Luckily for the tens of... This story is a little bit sarcastic, but I'm going to carry on. Luckily for the tens of people asking the question around the world, there is now a definitive answer. The gap in the seat is all down to hygiene and comes from the United States of America.
I bet I know.
Tell me then, go on. So we don't get a man's balls on there.
No, if a man doesn't flip the seat, doesn't matter, he won't wee on it.
But aren't your balls held back by your willy?
Depends what your positioning is, apparently.
My the other day I was at my boy's house, right? And I went to use the toilet. I'm embarrassed to say this, right?
Ian, you don't have to say it.
I do have to say it. I went to the toilet, right? And I went to the toilet, and I looked at the toilet, and I went, Boys! Has one of you just done a wee? And my eldest went, yeah, I have. I said, right. Quite a big wee, wasn't it? He said, yeah, how do you know? I said, you didn't lift the seat up. He just peed all over the seat. All over the lid of the seat.
Wow.
So just peeing, just on plastic.
Gosh, you must be thinking of something really important.
It's designed to give the user a bit more room to reduce the chance of you touching the seat with your genitals and gives one less place for urine to splash.
Yeah.
The U shape is also meant to make it easier for women to wipe without coming into contact with the toilet, according to Lynne Simnick, the Senior Vice President of Code Development at the International Association of Plumbing and Mechanical Officials. In yet another benefit, the seats are cheaper to produce and makes them less likely to get stolen, because it will be totally mortifying if someone came round your house and you had a U-shaped seat and not a full donut. There you go. Right, that's the story's been sat on my computer for weeks and was not worth the paper it was printed on.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
The word nonce is trending. It was number one earlier. Nonce is down to number four. I mean, bizarrely, do you remember the first time you ever heard the word nonce? Hang on. Big finish. I remember the first time I ever heard the word nonce. I was 21. I was going to see a friend's pantomime. And we were like in Croydon or somewhere. And I remember I was with Simon, my friend, and there were some young people. And they shouted something at me, and I shouted something back at them, and then one of them went, nonce!
Wow.
And I went, Simon, what is it? What's a nonce? He said, like someone who has it away with kids. I went, you cheeky bugger! Calling me a nonce! But that was the first time I ever heard the word nonce.
I can't remember.
Can you not? It's just always been there for you. It's always been ever present.
No, not really. Ponce we used to use a lot.
Well, Ponce is like someone who...
Sponges.
Like, yeah, sponges. Remember when Julia Hartley Brewer called the entire England football team nonce, a bunch of nonces? Remember that?
Yeah, and I think she meant ponces, didn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, she did. Oh, dear.
Ridiculous. I remember the first time I swore in front of my... No, second time I swore in front of my mum, a proper swear word.
Oh, yeah, go on.
I used the word... I was calling my sister a winker in the back of the car. Repeatedly. Like, repeatedly. And I must have been about 10. And I just remember seeing my mum's shoulders shaking. And I could see in the rear, in the driver mirror that she was laughing. And she turned around with a face like thunder and went, "That's the worst word in the world. Never let me hear you say it again." I've been calling it for ages.
I have to say, there's nothing funnier. My 7-year-old, well, I can't remember what we were, my sister was over and we were all sat at the table. We were having breakfast and he was sat on my lap because we didn't have enough chairs. And he's talking about a game or a film or someone online. And he said, and they were very naughty. They said the F word and the S word. And we all sort of looked at him and left a silence. And he looked up at us and went, and then he said them. There's nothing funnier than my 7-year-old saying the F-bomb. It's so funny. Because he's got quite a posh voice as well. Don't take after me. It's quite a posh voice. So a little 7-year-old, squeaky, posh voice. It's absolutely wonderful. Kids swearing, guys. I mean, if you want to send us recordings of your kids swearing, we'll play them out. We'll have to bleep them. But there might be something in that. Good evening, Steve.
Good evening, Ian. Yeah, I'd like to make a few points about this Prince Andrew thing.
Okay, here we go.
Right. If you could just allow me about a minute and a half, otherwise I'll lose train of thought.
Okay, we'll have a conversation, so let's see where we go.
Okay. Right, basically, the person that links all this together is Ghislaine, right? Now, Ghislaine is Prince Andrew's best female friend and also Epstein's girlfriend.
Right.
So she needs to be interviewed by the police. That's the first point.
Okay.
My second point is I've just Googled pictures, and I Googled a picture, and I saw Trump, Melania, Epstein and Prince Andrew,
yes,
all in the same pic.
Yes.
Right? Now, Trump is 30 years older than Melania. I know that's no problem, but bearing in his record of, you know, it's okay to grab a woman's private parts.
Yes.
And he's been accused of rape.
Yep.
Of a 13-year-old girl when he was in his 30s,
yep,
incidentally, at Epstein's mansion party.
Yeah.
And I've seen the harrowing video of the woman talking, a now woman talking,
yep,
which they've taken off, funny enough, a lot of the channels. So that's
I've seen that picture as well. It's a very famous picture, yeah.
Yeah. So they're all linked together basically, aren't they?
Well, quite possibly. I mean, quite possibly, yes.
Let's be honest, Trump's a you know, womanizer. Look what he says. Compare his morals with Obama's.
Trump's attitude towards women is atrocious. He has admitted sexual assault, and there are a significant number of women who say that they were raped by him. Doesn't make him guilty, and I'm now, thanks to the VIP paedophile scandal over here, Carl Beach was his name, and the stuff he made up, I am now, because of that case, I am now slightly more reticent to believe people accusing others of sexual assault than I was a year ago. I have a bigger question mark over such people. But yeah, Trump's attitude towards women, yeah, is atrocious, and nothing about him sexually would surprise me. Yeah.
Yeah, and when you think about it, Trump's meant to be the most important person in the world, as in, you know, the most powerful person in the world, and he's actually been accused of rape, accused of assault. Now, Andrew, I don't know, I'm not protecting him, but he hasn't been accused of rape, or he hasn't been accused of that yet.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, no, I mean, is it Victoria Roberts? Is that her name? I'm just, if it is, then,
I think
then
so,
five
yeah.
points.
Let's check.
Yeah, let's check. Let's get the accusation right. She has accused Ghislaine...
Virginia Roberts,
thank you. And Epstein of trafficking her around the world to have sex with the rich, the famous, and the powerful. And I believe, and Catherine is nodding, and she will stop nodding when I get it wrong, that she is accusing that one of the people she was forced into having sex with at the age of 17 was Prince Andrew. Am I correct, Catherine?
That's
the story, isn't it?
That's right, and that's something he denies, isn't it?
Now, there are some very slight nuances in as much that I see, and others might disagree, that the age of consent in this country is 16. Doesn't, you know, make a significantly older guy having sex with a 17-year-old. I still think that's creepy and wrong. But the age of consent, if we're going to be precise in this country, is 16. The age of consent in the majority of America at the time, I think, was 18. But in some states, I think it might have been like 13 or something. So I don't quite know the point I'm making. What I'm trying to say is, I am against paedophilia. I'm against child rape. I'm against trafficking of anybody for sex. I do think that there are a couple of little areas in this story that perhaps bear a little bit more questioning. But if what she says is true, happened, then it's horrendous, horrendous, horrendous. I don't for one second condone it, and my sympathies are with everybody involved.
I find it very interesting, the change of tone in referring to these women and girls, actually they were girls, weren't they, mm-hmm. for the most part,
yes.
is that now they're being referred to by a lot of the tabloids as sex slaves, rather than teenage sex workers.
To me, a sex slave is when you and your missus go, right, this weekend, you are mine, I'm tying you up. That's a sex slave, right? Two consenting adults going for a little bit of the old BDSM. 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old children are not sex slaves, they are rape victims.
But I just make another point.
Of course you can, Steve.
Yeah, if it's illegal, it's wrong, right? But there are girls, let's be honest about the Rod Stewarts of this world and all the people in the 70s. You think how many, they used to call them groupies, didn't
they? Okay, hang on a minute. Let's just park Rod Stewart to one side. Rod Stewart's not involved in this story. I'm sure Rod Stewart has led a thoroughly decent life. So let's just park Rod Stewart, let's put him in the attic with the train set, the model railway, and leave Rod Stewart out of this. So, yes, rock stars would have had groupies, and I'm sure a lot of those groupies were 14, 15-year-old girls. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So this is going to go on and on. But I believe this is you're calling me a conspiracist, but I think this is a thing going from the top. Because the people that are spreading the same things with, you know, the getting the sexies to fight each other, getting us to not like each other, getting us to, you dare look at that person, you dare make eye contact with that person.
Who's saying that?
It's all an agenda.
Who's saying, don't look at that, don't make eye contact with that person?
Well, that's how it's almost getting, that's what I'm saying, isn't it?
Are you talking about Me Too?
I'm talking about the sort of people that would have set that Me Too movement up. And it's not the women like you think.
Because I was so going along with you. Until you started spouting that bollocks. Who set up Me Too then?
The same people that set up Black Lives Matter, the same people that set up the right wing, you know, the right wing, the same. Why are all these psychops going on in America? You know, right. Trump supporters.
You say the same people set up Black Lives Matter and Me Too. Who are they?
The people at the top of the pyramid. The people that we're not allowed to mention.
Well, mention them. The Jews. Is that what you're saying?
The Zionists. There's a lot of difference.
Right. Oh, okay. Can I just say... Steve, thanks very much for your call. I see. Right. He really did meet the Jews. Okay.
Because... it couldn't possibly be a woman with a genuine gripe, could it?
For now on, I'm going to refer to Jewish people as the people we're not allowed to mention. Do you know what? I was going with him. And I was thinking, well, you know, when you've got President Trump, who has admitted to a sexual assault, and you've got Prince Andrew, you've got Epstein. Maybe this whole, you know, paedophilia thing is coming from the top. But he meant higher than that. He meant the people that cannot be mentioned, the Jews.
Incredible.
Wow. Steve, man, I was so with you, brother. I was so with you until it became an anti-Semitic, awful conspiracy rant. Why could it not be that Black Lives Matter was set up, and I don't know who set up these things, but was set up by some disenfranchised African Americans who were sick of seeing people who had the same colour skin being killed by police and the police getting away with it. I'm assuming that's the background of Black Lives Matter.
Well, yeah, but Tarana Burke is a person who is the founder of the Me Too movement.
Is she a person that cannot be named?
No.
Right.
She's called Tarana Burke and you can Google her.
She's the Me Too.
She's a civil rights activist from the Bronx, New York, founded the Me Too movement.
Yeah.
She began using the phrase Me Too on social media to raise awareness of the pervasiveness of sexual abuse and assault in society.
I shouldn't be laughing while you're saying that. Sorry, that's very disrespectful. I apologise.
And this is the thing, you know, it's... And now
but
it's
it
being...
it wasn't her idea. it was a Jewish man's idea.
Because it couldn't possibly be a black woman's idea.
That's a real,
someone with a genuine gripe.
The problem, the people that have problem with black lives, well, white lives matter too. Yeah, they do. And it would appear that white lives matter more than black lives. That's why Black Lives Matter has been created, because of course all lives are equal, right? Black, white, whatever, it's all equal. Except, particularly in America, and you can also look at the number of black men that die in police custody in this country, it's like way higher than any white guy. But particularly in America, black people are getting shot by the cops.
In their own homes, watching their televisions.
They're getting murdered. And I sound like a white middle-class do-gooder, but it's a fact. Black people are being murdered in their homes, as Kath says, out on the street, they're being murdered by white cops. And for the most part, the cops are getting away with it. And Me Too is like a lancing of a boil, something that's been percolating away for years, for decades, primarily in the entertainment industry, but everywhere. It's like a spot, a zip, that's been filling and filling and filling and filling with pus until someone went, I'm going to squeeze that. And all this stuff came out. Now, what Black Lives Matter doesn't do is it's not saying white lives don't matter. It's not saying black lives matter more than white. It's saying we're all equal, but at the moment they don't feel equal. And what Me Too isn't doing, it's not saying men, you can't go and chat up women. It's not saying men, you can't look at women. What it's saying is you can't rape women. You can't, it's saying lots and lots of things. It's lots of things. Go on.
You can't say to a 17-year-old head girl when you're there to give a motivational talk about how everyone can achieve it, it doesn't matter where you come from. You can't get her in a corner and ask her exactly how she came by the title head girl.
Which is what happened to you.
Uh-huh.
It's what happened to you. You cannot, as a man, I mean, you can also go into arguments about gay women as well, but primarily as a man, use your gender, your sexuality, your authority, your height, your strength, whatever, to sexually intimidate women. Doesn't mean you can look at women. You can even, in correct situations, say, hey, it's a really nice dress you're wearing. You can do that. And yeah, you can talk to women and you can chat women up.
If you need this explaining to you, I would suggest it's you.
Yes, yes.
If you don't, it's not you. You won't be offended because you get that, because you're not an idiot.
Yeah, you can't even, thing is, though, you can't even look at women these days. Yes, you can. Yeah, but you can't even chat them up. Yes, you can. Yeah, but you can't even force yourself sexually on them without their consent. No, you've never been able to. You've never been able to. You're not allowed to touch them without their consent. That's all. Me Too. It's just reminding people of the blinking obvious that we've all seemed to have forgotten.
Most people aren't getting upset about it. Those men are not getting upset about
it. Damn. And the ones that are getting upset with Me Too, and the white people that are getting upset with Black Lives Matter, you've got to wonder why they're getting upset. What part of their privilege, what part of their lifestyle is being impinged on by something that is only out there to cause good? It's not there to cause harm. It's not there to belittle. It's only out there to cause good. So what is your problem with being told you can't go up to a woman and slap her on the arse? What is the problem of being told, of being reminded that it's wrong that so many black people are shot by cops?
Because, here's a newsflash. This thing of you can't say anything these days, they don't like it anymore. We never liked it. We never liked it. And now women are saying so. And that shouldn't be problematic for you.
Unless you like going up to women and grabbing them up by the titties.
Yeah.
When you're not, you know.
If you wouldn't like someone to do it to your mum, your daughter or your wife, don't do it to someone else.
Steve, I was with you until the people that cannot be mentioned. Wow. Darren, stay there. That's the laugh I needed today. Thank you, Steve. 03444991000. This is Talk Radio.
Speech Radio with a difference. The late night alternative with Ian Lee.
You can call in about literally anything you want.
Experience the unconventional.
Evening, boys.
The unpredictable.
What's happening?
And the completely unorthodox.
Exactly.
With rule-free Ian Lee.
Descended into chaos.
The late night alternative with Ian Lee.
I've got a very poor internet connection.
Tomorrow night from 10 on Talk Radio.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
0344 499 1000. Can I just say, I have a real troubled relationship with Twitter. It's mainly a-holes on there, and I blocked a guy yesterday, a guy called Seth, who I muted 6 months ago for just treading that line a little bit too firmly on one side of being an a-hole, being rude. And then I blocked him last night. Him. I say him. Him in inverted commas. Really thoroughly unpleasant person. I should have blocked him a long time ago. And there's a few others, you know, the people that are mean and are horrible and stuff. But, I, tweeted today that my cat Velvet, who has been with me for, well, it would have been 19 years. I can date it. March the 27th, 2001. She came to live with me. I remember because we watched 9/11 together later that year. That was a tough start. But, she came, she was 2 years old, and she came on March the 27th. So I've always kind of just said her birthday is March the 27th. I don't know exactly. And I had to take her to the vets today, and I had to have her put down. Been with me nearly 19 years, and she's been fine, actually. She's all right. She's all right. She's just getting on my nerves. So I'd say, come on, bad enough. She's got really, really thin, and just the last 4 or 5 days, she's not been eating anything. She'll go up to her food, she'll lick it, and then she'll leave it. And it just dawned on me last night, oh, my God, she's not shouting at me. She used to shout at me when she was hungry. I thought, oh, she's not shouted at me for about 4 days. This is not good. And she's very wobbly on her feet. And last night, she was so thin, man. I mean, it's thin. I've never seen anything like it. And her legs were a little bit manky where she's not been cleaning herself. And I thought, oh, no, this is not great. And so I had a little chat with her last night, and we agreed that we would go to the vets today. And I phoned up, and I was tired because I had the builders come around at like 8, so I was up at 7:30, so I had 4 hours sleep. And I took her to the vets, and we were having a little chat. And they, in the end, I said to the vet, is it time? And he went, yeah, I think it is. Oh, it's going to make me cry. And so they put her to sleep, and I was there holding her and stuff. And, oh, it was the saddest, saddest thing. I love that cat. And so I tweeted it. I haven't got any pictures of her on my phone, but the only picture I've got is me in bed with her sniffing my eye. So I tweeted, you know, this has been the end of that, and Miss Velvet, and I've not had one mean comment. I've read all of your comments. Thank you. Too many to reply to. Dermot O'Leary, you know, wished her well. Reverend Richard Coles blessed her. It's been liked several thousand times. I've just had nice comments. Loads of people have lost their pets of about 20 years this week. Loads of people. And just really, really nice comments. And it makes up for all the a-holes, all the dicks. It's just, and I've read all of them, and I sort of have to keep dipping in and out because it just upsets me too much. And someone, oh, I can't. Oh, dear. Dave said a very pertinent thing. Dave said, who phones the show quite often, they're not like one of the family, they are one of the family. And that's the thing. If you don't have a pet, you don't get it. And if you're not a cat person, you know, it's just a cat. But Velvet was, I used to have to keep hiding my cocaine board because she would be like, she'd see me off my face. She helped me get clean because I would talk to her about it. After another use up, I'd be like, Velvet, man, what am I going to do? And we'd chat about it when I took mushrooms. We communicated psychically. I took some magic mushrooms and I'm lying on the floor watching Paul McCartney videos, and Velvet was sat on my back as she used to with her paw on my head. I remember thinking, oh, these mushrooms have worn off. And Velvet said to me psychically, no, they haven't. And we were chatting, and after about 2 minutes, we went, whoa, they haven't! I'm talking psychically to the cat! So it allowed me to actually have a proper psychic communication with it. It was incredible. But it was just really sad, and I've never held an animal when it's put to sleep, you know. And the vet says, do you want to have a couple of minutes with her before I do it? And I said, yeah, we'll have a little chat. And, it's the saddest thing. It's the saddest thing. And we're just there chatting, you know. And,
You were so lucky to have each other. And it's horrible.
It's horrible. And I didn't get her stuffed. Didn't do it. Part of me really wanted to say, he said, well, we have some options now. She's like lying there.
And he didn't mention stuffing.
He said, well, you can take her home if you've got somewhere you'd like to bury her. I thought, oh, bury her. Sounds like a lot of work. He said, or we can dispose of the body for you, or we can get her cremated, and we can give you the ashes. And I didn't say...
Is there a fourth option?
Do you know any taxidermists? Because that's really kind of my thing. But so I'm going to get her ashes. And, Jesus. Oh, it's horrible. It's horrible. 19 years of her. And then I went home, and then the other cats know. Because the babies, who've been ignoring me a bit recently, they've kind of started to get a bit more independent and just go and sit by themselves at the other end of the room, or even in the other side end of the house. But I came home, and the babies could see I was upset, and they just came and sat right on my chest, right up by my neck, and...
You don't think it's because they thought now is the time to finish him?
And Patty... This is what Patty sniffed my eye, which is what Velvet used to do. And, it sucks, man. It really sucks. But then someone did a really nice picture that had me in floods of tears. I said I wasn't going to cry.
It's all right to cry.
I know it is, but all I do is cry on this bloody show. Everyone's sick and tired of me crying on this show. Anyway, someone did a very nice picture of... it sounds really silly. Of me and Velvet just sat together.
Aww.
So that's that. That's that. Thank you, Velvet. It was fun. I'm so lucky she chose me. And here's the thing. The reason we got her, me and Tessa, when I was going with Tessa, I had to email Tessa today and say, just let you know, Velvet died. And she was kind of... She was still alive. We split up 13 years ago. What? But the reason we got her is because she lived in a pub in the Old Street in London. I can't remember what the pub was called. It's not there anymore. It's a club, I think, now. And she was one of two cats, hence the name Velvet, and the other cat was called Guinness. And Guinness was a little bit older and a bit bigger. Velvet was always a little bit small. And Guinness would bully Velvet. And which was fine, but then the couple were having a baby, and so I got her as a rescue cat. Best 40 quid I've ever spent in my life. And when I went round to get it, and the woman was very heavily pregnant, and she was very sad to let her go and stuff. But it dawned on me, that baby that was in her tummy would be 18, is a young man or woman now, you know. That baby is now officially too old for Andrew York. It's, you know, it's... There's a grown up. There's a grown up person out there. Anyway, I was very, very lucky to live with her. It means I'm down to four cats now, which I think is a safe
it's
number.
Almost normal, yeah.
It's almost normal. So what I'm trying to say is thank you everyone who sent nice messages, and I had loads of emails and loads of tweets, and I've not really replied to any of them. And I've liked the ones from famous people because I'm shallow. But I read every single one, and you're very, very kind, and it's made up for Twitter being a shithole. Right, we've got Darren, we've got David, and we've even got Mo. 0344-499-1000, the Late Night Alternative, weeknights from 10 with Ian and Kath.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
0344-499-1000 is the phone number if you want to give us a call. This is a telephone number. Right, let's get on with this. Here we go. Yes. Darren, good evening, Darren.
Hi, mate, how you doing?
I'm all right, thank you, Darren. What have you got for us tonight?
All right, well, you know, condolences on Velvet to begin with, all right?
Thank you, mate, I appreciate that.
How do we even follow that, what you just went through on the show?
But thank you, mate.
I just want to say, right, real kudos. I listened to the show, first time caller, not a long time listener.
Okay, you don't get a bell for that. There's no bell.
it's the mixture of compassion, like we called earlier, the methadone user.
Yeah.
And then the way you treat these proper dibs who come on afterwards.
I have no idea who you could be talking about tonight.
No, it's not Steve. It wouldn't be Steve. But the juxtaposition of those two parts of the show, I just love. I think it's fantastic, man. You do a fantastic job.
Thank you, man. That's why I like late night radio, because you get those Well, I wouldn't say they're even extremes. They're, you know, there are more, but you get those calls and you get time to explore those calls. And that's why me and Catherine, I think, are big fans of late night radio, because it takes someone, I think, very special to phone a radio station at 12:30 on a Tuesday night, or, you know, 11:15 on a Thursday. You know, it brings out some very special people.
I got made redundant on New Year's Eve, and I got this job that I've got now within a few days. But it opened up late night radio to me. I never used to listen before, you know, and the past 11 months have been brilliant. Absolutely fantastic.
Thank you, Darren. I'm getting choked up because Dave, I'm going to block Dogface Dave because he's just posted a very touching picture. And Kennedy sent me a very nice message, and he's just posted a really nice picture that I can't actually read all of. Darren, thank you, mate. I appreciate it. Spread the word, man. We need as many listeners as we can get.
Will do. Take care, both of you.
Thank you, mate. Thanks, care. Bye-bye. There you go. And he's right. He's right. That's why, sure, what Steve was saying was obnoxious and was anti-Semitic and was offensive and was horrible. But I love hearing it. I love hearing it. The cut's come out slightly wrong. But as a fan of phone-in radio, where it is a little bit more dangerous, in inverted commas, than radio where you have guests and stuff like that, it's certainly more unpredictable. That's the kind of stuff that makes me listen to the radio a little bit longer when I'm at home, you know, is people on the fringes.
Because people would have been listening to that call and going, yeah, there's something else there. There's something else there.
Yeah.
There's something else. Whoa, there it is.
It's a big one.
It's that.
It's a big one. Good evening, David.
Can you hear me?
Pardon?
Can you hear me now?
Is David there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me? Hello?
I think we've lost David.
Hang on. Hello? Yeah, hello? Hello?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, I don't see what.
Hello?
Sam, can you get...
Hello?
Can you hear David?
I think we're having a problem on the phones at the moment. 0344-499-1000 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. If only that would work on this call. Hello, Mo.
Hi. You all right?
No.
Well, thank you for asking. Well, anyway, Ian, I heard you're an ITV presenter.
Do you know how to use a telephone, Mo?
Yeah, I heard your ITV presenter.
I can't hear what you're saying. You're fading in and out.
Put your mouth next to the hole.
All right. I heard your ITV presenter.
There he is.
So, like, do you know the ins and outs of I'm a Celeb?
Do I know the ins and outs of I'm a Celeb?
Yeah. So, do you know, like, who's going to get knocked out?
Yes, I know. I've seen this. I've seen the running script for this year's I'm a Celeb. Yes.
Like, can you please tell them if you have any connection?
Yeah.
That please keep Ian right in.
He wins. Oh, I shouldn't have said it. I shouldn't have said it.
Dump it.
No, it's too late. We missed it. You didn't hear that from me.
No.
Mo, I can't understand a word you're saying, mate, and you're as far out there as the anti-Semite. Let's see if David's line is working now. David, can you hear us now?
I can hear
David,
you.
David, are you there, David?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Is it his line, Sam, or is it at us? Because I had problems hearing Mo.
I'm very much here. Hello? 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 Are you there? Hello? Oh, hello?
I'm trying.
Hello?
Oh.
Hello? Hello? Yeah, it's very quiet. I might have to be when I get home.
Hello?
Hello?
I'm still here.
I've got you on my hands free. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right, brilliant. Yeah, I can hear you now. I can hear you before. Still hear me?
I can, yes.
All right, brilliant. I just wanted to talk about pets, really.
It's a general chat about a little bit about last night. I've never called in before. It's my first call into...
Well, I have actually called in once
Just a general general polite chat, to be honest.
Yeah. Exactly that.
Yeah, that's it.
Hello?
Hello, still here?
Hello. Sorry, yeah, because I'm in the car, I can't tell whether the talking's dropping or not.
I don't think it can be my kit, because I'm using a really good quality Bose headset, and then I'm moving to an iPhone headpiece, and then I'm going to my phone, so there's a problem, clearly, with the
technical side. Yeah, I think it's my car, buddy, because I've got your hands free in the car. Motorway, I think it's stay with that, to be honest with you. I can hear you really well.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah, I've got some... I've got the really good Bose noise cancelling headphones on, and they connect to my iPhone really well, so... So, can I connect
to my iPhone? So, I call you when I stop driving?
Yeah.
That's better. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, buddy, I'll do that. All right, no worries. Tell Ian, sorry to worry about his cat, in case I don't end up getting through or whatever.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a chat. Like I said, it's my first time calling in. I'm not ringing in to be an idiot. I'm ringing in just to have a pleasant chat and give some compliments, to be honest. So, that's it.
I think we've got crossed lines here, mate. Do you think I'm from the radio?
It's Frank, innit?
No, I'm not on the radio, mate. I've called in myself. I think they've put two people by the sounds of it.
Have they?
It sounds like it, mate.
Who is that?
My name's Danny. I'm just calling in, mate, just for a chat.
And I'm ringing in for a chat, so we're connected.
Let's put us through to each other, mate. Jesus Christ.
How mad is this?
How mad is this?
Yeah, I'm in Glasgow on a work trip, so I was just ringing
in. Where?
I'm in Glasgow.
On, Glasgow?
With work, yeah.
No, you don't sound very Glaswegian.
No, I'm not. I'm from Lancashire.
Yeah, I can tell that. My dad's from Lancashire. My dad's from...
Where are you from?
I'm from a place called Gosport in Hampshire, like far south as you can actually get in the UK, without getting your feet wet.
Danny, they cross lines, mate. Don't worry about it.
Mate, crazy.
Listen,
name, buddy.
Lovely to speak to you, mate. Take care.
And you, buddy. Take it easy, mate. This is funny. Bye.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
That's what I'm talking about.
How have I never heard this version before? It makes me think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is there more Fats Domino? All I know of Fats Domino is Blueberry Hill. That's it. Is there more Fats Domino I should be digging? When did that song come out? 1968, the Beatles did it. It's from the album commonly known as the White Album, even though the real name is The Beatles, by The Beatles. And that's Fats Domino. I sort of thought he stopped doing songs in 1956. But he obviously recorded that 68, 69, I would have thought. Is there some more? I like that. I found some great Beatles covers for you tonight. Late Night Alternative, I'm Ian Lee. Who are you?
Catherine Boyle.
And Sam is answering the phones tonight. If you're waiting for a question, if you're waiting for the deep, detailed analysis of the Labour manifesto, if you're waiting for something, you ain't going to get it. You ain't going to get it. Instead, you're just going to get us rambling on. And tonight's prep involved me Googling weird Beatles covers. I found some great ones. Let me play. Let's talk to our friend Sharon first. Good evening, Sharon.
Hello, Ian. Hello, Catherine.
Hey, Sharon.
Hello, Sharon, my old friend. It's nice to bathe with you again. What can we do for you tonight, Sharon?
Don't shout at me. I have a story and I'll get to the point.
Well, come on. I like a style. Get to the point.
So, this time last year, I took an overdose.
And
ended up in hospital.
Oh,
okay,
sure. Yes.
Right. Now I've got a better point than this, right?
I like you. You're bonkers.
Yeah, and I was in a really dark place, really, really dark place.
Yeah.
A hospital for 5 days, whatever. Anyway, I went on a spiral, left my kids, left my husband at Christmas.
Flipping heck.
He asked me back saved my life. And we travel to work now every day, and on the way home, listening to your podcast.
Oh, ya-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. Hang on a second. Are you saying our, now, are you saying that our podcast is responsible for the suicide, the
no,
attempt to
take
our
No. Today, yeah. No. We've just, well, we're back together, but our little bond together is our drive to work in the morning.
Oh, Sharon.
And our little bond home again is our little drive home again with you two on the radio, and we laugh and we cry. And this morning's podcast was Chris in Plymouth.
Oh, that's from about, that's almost a year ago to the day.
It was a year ago, yeah.
Wow. Oh, yep. Sharon.
Yeah, and you said something on there that you said, when you get in that place, it's not, oh, I don't want this, or I can't live like this. It's, people are better off without me.
Mm, yeah.
And that's how I felt at that point. And I thought, oh, I couldn't wait till 10 o'clock to ring you and say, yes, that's what I thought.
Mm. But those thoughts, are you saying those thoughts are far behind you now?
Oh, way far behind me now. I've got a granddaughter and...
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I'm in a great place, but...
Brilliant.
We went to work this morning, and it was at that point where you went, Chris, can you answer me?
Uh-oh.
And then he had to get out for work, and all day long, I was like, oh my God, I couldn't wait to get back in the car to put the podcast back on. To hear that he was okay again.
Yeah. He came on the show. I can let a spoiler alert. He came on the show a month or two afterwards as well. Still, you know, life was still difficult, but he survived that evening.
Oh no, he flicks back and forth to like it might be last year, but then we might listen to it last night.
Oh God, is that not confusing? You can't jump around in time like that. It'd drive you crazy.
You know my husband anyway. He used to be your DPD driver, Craig.
Oh, Craig! Well, I do know Craig. He, when I moved into my new house, gosh, we're talking August last year, like day two or three, this fella rocks up. He goes, oh my God, I can't believe it's you. And of course, my ego was like, oh, well, of course. And he was a brilliant driver deliverer, better than the jerks we've got now doing it. Actually, the new one's really good as well. Oh, well, send my best to Craig, Sharon, and thank you so much for your kind words. And I'm really glad that you're back on facing the right way again.
Oh yeah, can I just ask you a question?
Oh, here we go. I haven't got any money.
No.
I haven't got any money.
No, it's all right. I've got none either. I don't need
good.
It.
Yep.
You said in your podcast that you were doing Luton next year.
Oh shoot, yeah. I need to get back to them with the dates. Yes, we're doing Luton Library next year. Probably not until about September, I think.
Okay, because I've looked on the website at your dates, and it's not there.
Not there yet. I'm going to write down in my diary, email Luton Library Theatre tomorrow. That's what I'm going to do.
And we will keep an eye out, and we'll be there.
Okay, okay. Hang on. Email Luton. Thank you, Sharon. So nice to talk to you.
And you.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Good night, Sharon. What a great start to the show. Thank you. Everybody. A lot of people out there struggling. That's the weird thing. For those who weren't listening to us, we're picking up new listeners at a rate of knots. About this time last year, we took a phone call from a guy called Chris, and he had taken an overdose, and he was outside, and he didn't know where he was, and he was dying. And thanks to the help of Catherine and some eagle-eared listeners, we were able to pinpoint exactly where he was. And 30 minutes, yeah, after 30 minutes, the police rocked up and saved him and took him to the hospital. I think he died for like, well, he was definitely in intensive care for a few days in a coma. Yeah. I think he might have died and they brought him back, but he was certainly in a coma. And I spoke to him a bit over that Christmas and he came on once or twice, on the show. I think the last time we spoke to him was about February earlier in the year. Chris, if you're listening, it'd be lovely to get an update, man, to know where you are and what's going on. And thank you for that, Sharon. Those are nice words. What a start to the show. How humbling. 0344. 499-1000 is the telephone number. I had something really good for the show tonight, and I forgot to write it down. It was one of those things. I thought, this is so good.
I do not need to write it down, and I'll remember it. And I can't. I thought tonight, one of the things, I can talk about it a little bit easier now, about my velvet, my cat being put to sleep yesterday. I can talk about it a little bit easier, but it's still very sad. But what struck me, it's for those of you who've been listening for a while, you'll know all about Velvet. For the new listeners, it was a cat. I got her nearly 19 years ago. She was 2 years old. She was a rescue cat, and she's seen me through a marriage, through two kids, through a couple of long-term relationships. I had to have her put her down yesterday. She was coming up to 21, and she was not very well. And I took her to the vet, and the vet said, well, it's possibly her kidneys, and we could possibly give her an injection that might have an effect in 48 hours. And then he sort of paused and looked at me, and I said, is it time? And he said, I think it probably is. And so we put it down. Oh, it's the saddest thing. It's the saddest, saddest thing. And the reason I can talk about it now without crying is because I've been crying all day, all day. And I might start crying in a bit. And, but several things have come out of that. Oh, and I got a card from the vets today. Oh, I got a card from the vets saying, really sorry for your loss. And it was signed by everyone at the vets. What a lovely thing to do. There's a couple of things that kind of come out of it. Firstly, right, I tweeted, not the greatest picture of me in Velvet. It's me in bed, topless, with her sniffing my eyeball, which is one of the things she liked to do. But it's the only one I could find.
Better than her nibbling your nipple, which she also liked to do.
I never took a picture of that. That was a private moment between the two of us. Oh, when I got into bed last night, and I took three packets of cat food out of the cupboard, and I went, ah, yes, and I put one packet back, and then I went upstairs to bed, and I looked at where she would normally sleep, and I've got to move her bed and clean her hairs, and I've got her bowl. No one, none of the other cats are using her bowl. That bowl is Velvet, so I'm just saying. Anyway, so I tweeted it, right, and the tweet has been, I'm not doing this for likes, obviously, but it's been liked like 12,000 times or 10,500 times, something like that, by big names. Dermot O'Leary, Susie Dent, Linda Nolan, big names,
cat
right?
Fans,
which is great, and I've not had one snarky, mean reply to that tweet. Now, admittedly, I muted a lot of people over the years, and I blocked a lot of people, but still, you would think, I would think, maybe you wouldn't, I would think, I was waiting for the "oh man up" snowflake. You're crying again like you did in the jungle. The tension seeking. I was expect one of those. Nothing. Unless I've missed it. I think I've seen all the comments. I think I've read all the comments. And I've taken the time to do that. So thank you. And all the emails. Thank you. Apart from the email from one guy who's a stalker. Who sent me an email. Unbelievable. A guy that we've reported to the police. Just wanted to say, but sorry to hear about you. But you, but what? We reported you to the police, you nutjob.
Yeah, could you not? Could you not?
How dare you mention Velvet's name in an email, you scumbag. But not one snarky comment. And then our friend Dave DM'd me and said, I think you're finally having the experience on Twitter that most people have. Is Twitter, mate? I have no question to it. It just proves to me that there are a lot of good people out there. A lot of good people. So many nice comments. And so many people very kindly sharing pictures of their cats and their dogs. And a lot of cats have died recently around the age of 20. I don't want to say I've got a conspiracy
theory. Where were you on the night in question?
Exactly. I think we know who's doing it. It's the people whose names can't be mentioned. It's a reference to last night's show and our anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. I do not think the Zionists or the Jewish people are going around killing cats around the age of 20. I have to clarify that. But most people have been really understanding. I was expecting a bit of, mate, it's only a cat, get over it. But most people have got it. And then I found myself...
They don't want to rile the cat lovers.
No. And someone tweeted, Ian, it's Twitter, cats are taken very seriously here. Thank you. But then I found myself doing, and I apologise for this, but this show is about honesty. I found myself thinking about a couple of tweets I saw, what I was expecting to get back, right? And the thing is, the first thought, we've talked about this, you can't control the first thought. The first thought is what the knee jerk is instinctual.
instinctive, I would say.
Okay.
But I think you can say that.
The second thought is the one that counts, as far as I'm concerned. First one that pops up, you can act on it, you can go with it, you can run with it, or you can go, nah, get out of here. What do I really think? And I'll tell you what it was. Someone tweeted me that, and this might make you laugh, or it might not, if you're a better human than me. Someone tweeted, yeah, we lost our pet lizard of 5 the other day, and it broke my heart. And someone else tweeted about a snake dying. And I went, yeah, all right, mate, whatever. And then I realised I was doing what I was expecting other people to do to me, because I do not see a lizard or a snake in the same way that I see a cat. I was being snobby. I was being a snob. I was being arrogant, and I was being a snob. And it was really interesting. I was, because I saw it as I was getting in the car, and then I was driving, and I thought, God, that's a terrible first thought to have. Because obviously to those people, they were part of the family in the same way that Velvet is one of my kids. Velvet was my oldest kid, my little girl. And these pets had similar, identical, whatever places in their family. And I felt really bad that my initial reaction was to sneer slightly, privately. I didn't tweet. Of course I wouldn't tweet. To sneer slightly, bloody lizard dying. But of course it doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't matter what it is. You have a living creature that is part of your family. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter what it is. I want to thank those people for sharing that with me, because it really caused me to think a lot about what makes a family, what makes, you know, why we invite pets into our lives, and why they become so important, and why they can be like extra children or brothers or sisters. You know what I mean? Give me that kind of thing. Are you about to cry, or are you stifling
a
yawn?
No.
Or is it a fart?
Before, but now I've got a cat, but before,
it was a fart.
I only ever had goldfish.
Yeah.
And they were pretty, I mean, they're a bit selfish.
It's tough to build a relationship with, but I did get upset when
I was really upset when my goldfish died, like really upset.
I wasn't so upset when the boy's goldfish died, because it was like every other week and I just had to keep going buying another one. But we do invite animals to be part of our families. And I learned a real lesson today. It doesn't matter. To me, it's cats. The boys have got a dog. I'm not so keen on dogs, but I get it. And I couldn't get, until I saw these tweets, a snake and a lizard. I couldn't get it. Huh? But now I get it. So I want to thank those people for sharing that with me. It's really got me to think a lot. But also, I'm so thrilled that so many people have identified, what I've definitely not said to anyone, and it's popped up in my head, didn't say, well, I wanted to say it to the vet when he put Velvet down, wanted to say it to the receptionist when I said, can I settle up? And she said, well, we don't have to do it today now. I said, no, let's just do it. Wanted to say it to the builders at home. Patrick, if you're listening, please don't cause another leak in my house. For God's sakes, man. For God's sakes, Patrick caused a leak in my house that has caused thousands of pounds worth of damage. My God. I wanted to say it on Twitter. And what I wanted to say was, oh God, you must think I'm so stupid crying about this. And that is a real me trying to cover up my, trying to explain away my, God, you must think I'm so stupid crying about this. Because of course the vet isn't going to think that. The receptionist isn't going to. People might think that, but so many people, what's the point I'm trying to get to? So many people on Twitter have shown me, of course it's not stupid to be upset about that, that it is, it's not like losing a family member, it is losing a family member. And the grief is as real and as heavy as anything else. Would I cry more if one of my boys went? Yeah, probably. Of course. But the grief is real. The pain is real. I've been crying so much today, so much. And I was trying to find some pictures, and I found a few. I can't find many of when she was younger, but I've got a few. And I found a half dozen because my ex-wife wanted some because she's very upset. And I found some, and then I was in tears, and I thought, I can't look for any more. This will do for now. So I've been in tears today. And I'll cry again when I go home. Of course I will. And that, you know, And I'm close to it now, but I'm not going to. But it doesn't matter if I do. But so many people have shown me that the grief when a pet goes is just as real and just as valid as when a human being goes.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio. The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
0344-499-1000. What is going on with you, cads?
Sorry, man. I've got a game from an 85 out with Lionel Blow and name that tune.
Oh, go on, let's play it.
I'm battery down on the mobile. Because it was gone to a commercial break. Oh. Anyway, Bob, sorry to hear about your characters. I know it's like to lose a pet.
What did you have, Alan?
Well, I had two dogs that died.
What were their names?
The first one was called Lady. And the second one was called Bella.
It's sad, isn't it?
They were both 16 years old when they died.
Oh, man.
First one, Lady died of a heart attack.
Oh, blimey.
And Bella died of a broken leg in old age.
Ah, man, it's, sad, isn't it? When they,
Yeah, they were proper pets of the family. And Lady helped me cope with my phobia of dogs.
I'll play this for your sadly deceased dog.
Thanks, Rob. I'm your knight in shining armor, and I love you. You have made me what I am, and I'm yours.
My love.
Oh, there's so many ways I want to. I still fear. Take her for a walk every day. Let me hold you in my arms for evermore. She would, I don't remember, sit there with her on the sofa in the living room, watching the telly. You have and she would come up and give me a kiss. And me, I really like that dog. I'm so lost in your love. And oh girl, we belong together. Won't you believe in my song? Lady, for so many years I thought I'd never find you. You had come into my life. You're right, Alan. I'm just a bit sad about Lady.
Yeah, I know. It is sad. I hope you don't mind us playing that. I thought that was just a lovely song, and I thought it might be a nice little tribute. To you. Yeah, and it's nice to hear your thoughts, and, yeah, nice to hear your thoughts on it, Alan.
Thank you, boss.
No, thank you, mate. I'm sorry if I upset you.
That's okay. Anyway, life goes on, and I've got RuPaul's Drag Race UK report.
Don't spoil it, please!
It's from last week.
Speaking of ladies.
Yes, hang on, I've got a song for that. It goes, it goes a little bit like this.
Is that Mega Chips or Divina the Campo?
Don't spoil it, please!
No, I'm talking about last week.
But just don't spoil it.
You know, Catherine and I have been invited to the RuPaul's Drag Con in Olympia in January.
Wow!
Yeah, and a lot of the big stars are going. Oh, and which one started following me? Bag of Shite?
No.
Bag of
Vinegar Strokes.
Vinegar Strokes started following me, which is great.
Well, she was eliminated in week three, she was.
Yep. I like those ladies. I don't know why they focus so much on their brothers. The brothers are weird, horrible looking men. But the ladies are great.
There was a drag queen from Birmingham in that series called Something Wrong.
Yeah, there was, I remember.
Yeah.
She got eliminated in week four.
There we go. Alan, nice to talk to you, mate. Thank you for sharing your stories about ladies. It's nice to hear, you know, how pets can have an impact on us. And thanks for the RuPaul's Drag Race update.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much indeed. 03444991000. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Stimulating nightly emissions guaranteed to open your eyes and your mind.
Oh, my word.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
0344-499-1000. Switchboard is empty. Tomorrow night, all 3 hours straight to air. Sam's going to join us in the studio. We're going to bring some food and some drinks in. And we're just going to, you know, see what happens. Right. Here we go. I'll do a story, and then you do a story, and then we
oh, let's do stories.
I might be bothered. Fancy going that one. Huh? Can Andre not come in early? He's so full of energy.
Yes.
I don't know if by what the time's he finished? 5 o'clock. I don't know if 4 hours is enough time for him to burn off his exuberance. So if he wants to come in 37 minutes early and try and burn off a little bit more exuberance, I'm going to be honest, I'm not listening by 5 o'clock. I'm asleep, right? If anyone has listened to Andre Walker at the beginning of the show and at the end of the show, is the exuberance the same all the way through, or what goes up must calm down? He can't be as upbeat at 5 o'clock as he is at 1 o'clock.
It's not a sustainable lifestyle, is it?
It is not. And if he is as upbeat, that man's gonna die at the age of 27, like Jim Morrison in a bath.
Oh, okay.
That's not a threat, by the way. Relying on public transport to get around means you may need to lower your tolerance of being in close proximity to other humans. I love getting the tube. I love getting the bus. I love getting the train. But not at peak times.
I do not like being sandwiched between people's armpits. Unless I know the person.
I do take pleasure. I've got a dirty little secret.
Oh, God.
I do take, if it's a really packed train, and dropping my guts.
Oh, my God. That secret is not a secret.
I really do.
But it is dirty.
It's like a sort of low-level terrorist. You know what I mean? It's like a low-level
chemical weapon.
Thank you. That's it. And so I do enjoy doing it. Now, if ISIS just went around dropping their guts, you know what? I'd be annoyed, but I'd be prepared to sit around the table and talk. Okay? But I do that.
Here's the thing with you.
Hello, Catherine.
I've worked with you for what? 6 years now?
6 or 7 years.
So long that now I know your farts from anybody else's. That's...
Oh, I can tell I can identify my boys. They've both got different smells. It's like when I say, right, who's farted? And my youngest now goes, it wasn't me! And you know, because I always tell you when it is! But I had Patty, the kitten, 12-week-old kitten on my shoulder the other day.
She's the sweetest little dot.
Tight, beautiful little thing. I'm tempted to bring them in. She sat on my... Shout. Well, that's it. She nearly did. She sat on my shoulder and just went... I went, what? You dirty mare!
Yeah.
Velvet would never have done that. Whether it's being wedged in between two strangers closer than you've been with anyone for a while, or trying not to cry when someone coughs without putting their hands over their mouth, some things just come hand in hand with taking trains.
When people cough like this.
Oh, disgusting.
Just leave their mouth wide open.
I hate people. Really hate people.
Disgusting.
But one man has pushed the patience of his fellow commuters to the limit by deciding to transform the train station platform into his personal bathroom. It's not quite as bad as that. A photo posted online shows a man happily brushing his teeth as he waits for the tube in London before spitting out the contents of his mouth onto the floor in front of him. That is out of order. Twitter user Melissa Thurms uploaded the snap with the caption, disgusting behaviour at Euston Station this morning. Packed platform, and this man starts brushing his teeth and spits repeatedly on the platform. Now, here's a jungle secret. Stanley Johnson, who is a disgusting man, in that every step he takes, I remember we won...
I'm amazed he lasted so long on Hunted.
But he's deaf, he can't hear anything, right? So, I remember one...
I don't remember quite remember how, but the men wanna slap up. I ate so well in that jungle. I ate so well. I had the best meals I've had, constantly.
That pig's fanny, huh?
But we, pig's fanny, yeah. We,
that was disgusting. The way they kind of uncorked it.
Oh, beautiful. No, bug smoothies or anything this year.
No, I know.
Bow to pressure, pussies. None of those either. But we want the men won like a slap up meal, and it was at night time. It was really late at night, and they sort of rushed us because it was so late, so we didn't really enjoy it that much. But so we're walking down, and we had to walk through this dark, and me and I don't know, two thickos I was with were behind him, and just literally every step. It's not an exaggeration. And it was me, Dennis, Amir, and I can't remember the other guy's name, Jamie. We're just in hysterics. And then you'd notice it all the time. You'd just be sat talking to him. And in the middle of a sentence, he'd carry on talking. But while he's talking,
no,
would just come out. And you'd think, and he obviously didn't notice it. He must have, Stanley Johnson
can't hear,
must
but...
have such a loose anus. Because it would just come out. And he would feel it. But he also, another thing, he also was disgusted, right? By people brushing their teeth in front of him. He thought it was like cleaning your genital or something. I remember him saying, it's like Toff or a couple of people were walking about brushing their teeth. Oh, it's disgusting. I said, what's disgusting, Stan? That is private. That should be done in private. That is not, I do not want to see that. I said, well, brushing your teeth is, yeah, it's a personal, private matter. Yeah, exactly. It's going on. It is a personal, private matter, and people shouldn't see that. Now, there
meanwhile,
wasn't
you're
much
walking
room.
In his backdraft.
There wasn't much room in the sort of washing thing. And also, there was a nice bit of stream just on the other side of the camp that was good to brush your teeth in. So you brush your teeth, and you'd spit into the stream, and then you'd get into bed. But he found it disgusting. Really, really disgusting. Weird old thing. Very weird man. Very strange.
Windy man.
Very strange, windy man with very strange principles.
I think old men in particular do lose track of their guts, don't they?
Yeah. Did the story... Did they show... Because I've not watched...
That never came out. You would think that the I'm a Celebrity would go for that. That's generally the sort of stuff they like.
Did they show him telling the story about the time he was nearly raped in Afghanistan?
It's not one of the highlights I remember.
Right. He told an amazing story. And he told it, it's an incredible story, right? He told it in front of camera, so it's all right for me to say, about how when he was a young man in his 20s, I think it was Afghanistan, maybe Iraq, but I think it was Afghanistan, he went travelling around the world. And I bet 22-year-old Stanley Johnson, I bet he was all right. Blonde, striking young man. Tall, certainly tall and very blonde.
Is he tall?
Yeah.
I didn't realise that.
And he was in Afghanistan. I can't quite remember the full details. But he was trying to get somewhere. And he was in a coffee shop. And these two men said, oh, well, we're going that way. We'll give you a lift. And he was like, okay, that's great. Yeah, definitely. So he got in their car. And after a while, he realized they were driving him up a mountain.
Oh, blimey.
I'm pausing because I want to make sure I get this as right as I can. And he worked out they were going to rape him. These two older Afghani men were going to rape him, right? And he's telling this in a very humorous, he's a very good storyteller. But he was telling this packed full of jokes and everyone's laughing, right? And I'm sat there thinking,
God, this is
I don't
dark,
know if we're meant to be, this isn't, he's choosing to tell it with humour. Great. I've told my stories of abuse with humour for a long time. But laughing is... Anyway. And... I can't quite remember. They either locked him in a shed. Or he jumped out of the moving car. I think he jumped out of the moving car and hid in some bushes. I think he broke his arm. Hid in some bushes. He was really badly injured. Hid in some bushes, and they came out with guns.
My God.
Trying to find him. I think they'd taken his shoes as well. And he had to walk down this mountain in Afghanistan at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, knowing that somewhere in the background were two horny rapists with a shotgun.
Flipping out, man.
And of course he escaped, and he wasn't, he told us he was not raped in the end. And I remember him telling us this and thinking, wow. And then everyone sort of had this crush on Stanley that I never quite bought into.
Well, yeah, that got shown. The you saying that you're not going to drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Like, did they show that?
Ian Lee compares Stanley Johnson to cult leader.
It was like that. I don't know if he was doing it deliberately, but certainly everyone fell into
they
that.
They got sucked into the old man charm.
Yeah, yeah. And he's a nice guy, mm-hmm. but I didn't buy into that. But then they all wanted to, at the behest of Jamie Lomas, they wanted to write, they kept wanting to do things for him, like serve their master. And so they wanted to have an evening that was like a tribute to Stanley Johnson. And so we all had to write this poem. Now, we weren't allowed anything to write on, but they managed to keep some paper, some big sheets of paper from a task, and the producers let us keep it. And then someone found some chalk. And we had to go off. You get like a, you know when there's a birthday card going around?
Yeah.
You get have you signed the old birthday card? You go sign it. It's over there. And so we all had to go and write this, like, four lines of a poem.
Whose idea was it? Was this Toff's idea?
Jamie's.
Flipping out, man.
And you know the tune of the poem. Sing the tune of the poem.
Da 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 da
da da da da da da da da da da da da da
da da
da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da a funny verse about
farting?
The time you were nearly...
No.
But they didn't use the word rape. I'm sorry, I'll stop using that word. Sorry, I realise I've said that word a lot and that can be upsetting for people, so apologies. I'll stop using that word. But they wrote a funny verse about the time he escaped from that situation. And I think Jenny and Toff were the only people that went... maybe Shappy as well. Is this really meant? Should we be putting this in? This doesn't feel like okay, he told it in a funny way, but that's up to him how he tells that story. I don't know if we should be doing a comedy, putting this into a comedy. I kept quiet because I thought the whole idea was look at that scratch of my from my cat. I kept quiet because I thought the whole thing was just an awful, awful idea. But I was not in favour at the time, and I didn't want to. I just kept quiet. And did my silly, boring, silly lines. And we all had to stand there in a line and perform it for him. Oh, and while he was sat on a throne, I'm just thinking, this is awful. But they kept they put that thing in the poem. He's lived an amazing life, right? He's lived an amazing, amazing life. And he's been to some very dangerous situations. But, I would have thought they would have shown that. They didn't show that on a Saturday night on ITV. Gosh.
No.
Okay.
Not that I recall.
It was incredible. And also, I guess if you want a serious point out of it, it highlights that if you are a victim of anything, you are allowed to tell the story how you want to tell it. It doesn't mean other people can tell the story in the same way. I for a long time, told my abuse in a very humorous, very funny way, and I would laugh about it. But that was my way of kind of dealing with it. I don't want to read too much into Stanley's psychology, because there's nothing to do with me, really. But if he wants to tell a story like that in a funny way, maybe it is funny to him. Maybe it is funny. Happened 50-odd years ago. Maybe it's a funny story to him. I don't think that gives us the right to then tell that story and make jokes about it.
I've told stories about dodgy things that happened to me.
A French guy masturbating in front of you, and you're laughing now.
I know.
And you've told, and you remember you telling me that story, and you told it to me a few times. I remember saying, but you know that's abuse, right? You know that he has abused you by doing that.
Yeah. I know. But the way to express it in what I thought was acceptable to other people was to couch it in, God, what a weirdo.
And
but actually,
okay.
It was horrific.
Yeah. And that's okay. You can tell it any way you want, and I can't judge you for it.
But it was only years later.
Yeah.
There's been other things, like the guy that followed me home tried to push me in the flat.
Well, when you told me that, I couldn't believe that's horrific.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you push you in the flat? And how did you get out of that?
I managed to shove him out the door, but... That I saw as a, oh God, that was a weird thing that happened. And that's the story I told it.
There's a guy that assaulted you and quite possibly nearly sexually assaulted you as well.
Yeah. And there's been a couple of things like that. But it's only kind of, as you get further away from it, that you feel I think sometimes, or I felt brave, not brave enough, I felt able to address how serious it could have been.
Yeah.
Because when it first happens, I think the way to deal with it is to minimise it.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
God, in that, a strange way of dealing with it.
There is something, I was going to say there's something humorous. No. There's something pathetic about a man masturbating in front of a woman on a train. That's it, not humorous. That's the word. There's something pathetic about that, which I think lends itself to kind of the, almost the pointing and the laughing thing, right?
But the most shocking thing to me about that incident was that no one else said anything and other people noticed.
Well, I told you about when I was 16 and I was 15 or 16 and I was in London with my friend Malcolm and we'd come to see Transvision Vamp and there was a train strike. And so we had to get home at a certain point and we'd had a couple of beers and there were these two men in their 40s, 50s started chatting us up on a train, on an underground station. And I was kind of, he wasn't chatting us up to start with. He was just kind of talking sort of drunken nonsense and I was sort of winding him up a little bit, as I do now with some of the callers.
Yeah.
And then it got very overtly sexual very quickly. He talked about how he wanted to film me having sex with a pig.
Oh my God.
He said, and this is the funny bit, he said, ABBA, that's how ABBA got famous. I'm like, all right. He said, oh, well, you've got a beautiful young man. I want to film you. He didn't say anything. Well, I was like, all right. And then he started talking about, do I like giving blowjobs and stuff? And I was like, whoa, all right. And the tube came and there weren't many tubes. So we had to get this. And we jumped on one and he jumped on with his mate, the same entrance. So we jumped off and ran down and jumped on and he followed us. And then he walked down the train and I was 15, but I was tall. So I looked older and he started touching me up, started groping me on the train. I was terrified. I summoned up all my energies, a packed train. I summoned all my strength and courage and I shouted at him, if you touch me again, I'm going to effing smash you in the face. I'm shaking with fear. And his response was very drunk. I remember it slurring. I'm ever so sorry for touching you in such a sensual way.
God.
And no one said anything, man. No one said anything. And we got off at the next stop and me and my friend ran off and then we had to get a cab and awful. I can feel it in my chest now. And no one said anything. And I can't imagine being in a situation where someone says something like that, I mean, at the very least, not standing up and using my height as a weapon and just going, is everything all right? I can't imagine not doing that. Maybe it's because that happened to me and I was on the receiving end of it. But so the point of what you were, so don't take the attention off of you to me, but the point of you saying that happened on a train and no one said anything, it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me. Unfortunately.
There's a bloke sitting there with his kid right next to it. But then I suppose he's horrified that this is happening in front of his little girl.
There are, you can cite loads of psychological studies of group think.
Yeah, but doesn't it take one person to step up and then?
It takes one person to break the dam and then nearly everyone will kind of get involved.
The thing is, I've also been in situations where things have started to happen and I've just frozen. I get it.
Yeah. It's,
maybe it's different being a woman on your own. Actually, the older I get, the braver I get, I think. Because I'm probably becoming that old woman who don't give a toss.
I call people out a lot. I remember a few years ago, my eldest was in a buggy and there were some kids at the bus stop in Muswell Hill, a nice area, smoking weed. And I called them out for it. I said, guys, come on, man. I've got a baby here. You can't do that here. Or a few years ago, it tends to be, I'm quite confident speaking to drug people because of my history. There were some kids sniffing lighter fluid in Windsor and the kids were with my wife. And I said, you guys go on, I'm just going to have a quick chat with these. And I went, guys, come on, man, right? My kid could have seen that. First of all, that stuff you're sniffing is shit. You don't want to do that, but if you're going to do it, please try and find somewhere that my kids can't see it. But also, if you're going to do drugs, don't do that. That's not a drug.
Yeah.
That's going to fry your brain. Anyway, so drug people, I'm quite happy to go up and say, come on, man, there's got to be something better than that today.
I think I'm all right with people who are, I could be their mother. People swearing in the street, I can, in front of my kids, yeah. I'll say something.
Oh, I'll call people out for swearing.
Yeah. We went to the park when my kids were really little, and me and my mum, we'd been over there, and we had to tidy it up so that we could use the swings, because it was on a weekend, it was probably after a Friday night, and the bigger kids go down there and, like, you know, there's a supermarket opposite, so they buy everything. Kissy, yeah, loads of bottles and all sorts. Yeah. So we just tidy it up, and then this group of girls came, and they're all sitting around in a circle. And do you know what? I get it. I get how you can get a bit sweary and loud with your friends, because you forget yourself.
Yeah, of course.
Especially, I think, kids these days, because they don't get let out until they're like 14, 15. They're playing inside their back gardens or going to each other's houses because parents are so worried, you know, and I think sometimes justifiably, about letting their kids play in the street. My street is so full of cars, you couldn't play the way we used to in the street. Although I do try and let my kids do that. But so they're not used to it. They're not used to sort of rubbing along beside the rest of society and knowing what's appropriate, you know, behaviour sometimes, and you get carried away and daft stuff. So I get it. These girls were sitting in a circle, and they just, like, were starting to throw litter over their shoulders. And so I really quietly went up and I said, listen, you are going to pick this up, aren't you? Because I've just spent half an hour doing this so I can tidy up for the kids, and I know that you wouldn't want that. And they were like, oh, I'm really sorry. And I think they had just forgotten themselves. Yeah. And you show off in front of your mates, don't you?
No.
But I'm not frightened of that kind of stuff. But the other end of things, like that time on the subway in New York, when that guy started on you. That was awful.
That was terrifying. And we were on our way to see Imani Coppola, and she said, why would you make eye contact with a schizo guy? And what she meant by that was, she may have actually said schizophrenic, I'm not sure, but of course, she did, didn't she? Of course, in America, you've got to pay for your healthcare, so there are loads of very seriously mentally ill people just riding the trains, walking the streets, people who could potentially be psychotic.
But this guy was walking up and down the carriage, challenging people to look him in the eye and stuff, wasn't he?
And I did the whole hippie, hey, I'll talk to you, brother. Of course I'll talk to you. And then he was threatening to kill me.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, oh my God, we're in a country where they actually have guns. This guy's going to shoot me.
At one point he said, I'm going to make you scared. You scared? I'm going to make you scared. You wait till we get off this train. That was terrifying.
We recorded it. We got 20
minutes
of audio.
The woman sitting next to us was crying.
She was, wasn't she? Yeah, she was. That was
awful.
Unpleasant. That was unpleasant.
Again, completely silent carriage.
Yeah.
And this is New Yorkers.
Yeah. I hadn't made the connection about mentally ill people. And they had obviously made the connection about guns and knives that I had failed to.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.